Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, it's time to take a look back at the year in Houston dining 2025. We will talk about some of our favorite new restaurants, some of our favorite meals, maybe a classic that we either discovered or rediscovered, the saddest restaurant closings, and whatever else sort of comes up in the flow of the conversation. To do that, I am joined by two of my regular co-hosts. She is the owner of Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer. Mary Clarkson, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Very happy to be here today.
Thank you for doing this.
Of course.
He is the owner of Craft Pita. Rafi Nasser, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me, and happy early New Year.
Happy early New Year to you. Happy Merry Christmas to all the people listening to this. Happy New Year to everybody. This is always a fun show. This is our chance to kind of take a step back and, you know, celebrate what has been, I would say, a difficult year in the world of Houston restaurants. You know, we've seen a lot of closures that cut deep for a lot of people, me and a lot of people that listen to the show, but also some exciting new restaurants. And so, you know, I want to sort of celebrate and recognize, in my opinion, Rafi, has been a pretty good year for new restaurants. What do you think?
I think so too. I think, you know, as everyone knows, it's financially been really tough for the industry this year. But there's definitely been some highlights. And thankfully, a lot of those highlights were people in the city and not some out-of-town restaurant group, which is refreshing and nice from what's been happening over the last few years. And it's nice to know that Houston is ready for new takes on things and new spins on things. And that's kind of, I think if you look at when we go over my list is like a lot of things that we're missing in the Houston dining scene.
Yeah, you know, I think that's well said. And Mary, just building on Rafi's point, you know, I know that I think two of the places we're going to talk about are chefs who moved here for job opportunities and maybe didn't know necessarily that they were going to stick around in Houston and ultimately open their first restaurants here. But they kind of got charmed. They just, you know, they fell in love with Houston and decided that this was the right place to be.
I think Houston is such a magical place for entrepreneurs and people to open businesses. I do think it's been a tough year in restaurants, not only in Houston, but just everywhere. People have definitely felt the cost of inflation, and tariffs for sure are starting to affect everybody. But Houston is a place where you can definitely make it if you put in the work. And I think a lot of people have been rewarded for coming to Houston, and I'm not surprised that people are charmed. Once you're in Houston, it's a lovely place to be, and you feel the support of the community.
No, I agree with all that. You know, Rafi, why don't we kick things off? Why don't you give me your top, let's say, three or four new restaurants that opened in Houston this year?
Sweet. I'll give you my three. I think the first one, you're not going to be surprised. I'm putting Agnes and Sherman as
Damn.
My top. it's on all three of our lists.
Yeah.
So before you get into your other two, let's spend a couple of minutes talking about Agnes and Sherman, because I knew that was going to come up. Why is it on your list? What is it about Agnes and Sherman that really stands out for you?
I think one of the things that you would recognize the Houston food scene for is the quality of our Asian food scene, whether it be Chinese food or Vietnamese food. But I do think we were lacking in a modern Asian restaurant. And I think Nick Wong's angle of making it a diner and making it casual, but using his fine dining background of how to prepare these things, and kind of, you know, bending your brain with some of these dishes, whether it's the savory scallion waffle or the rangoons prepared almost like, you know, chips and queso. I just took some friends from out of town recently, and we had the crispy shell on shrimp and the rice cakes. And I think the rice cakes is a great example of Nick Wong's cooking, because it's African Ouda peppercorn with Korean tteokbokki with, you know, Italian Parmesan cheese. And I just think what him and their GM, Pam Cantu and Knicks co-owner, Lisa, what they're doing is just really special.
All right, Mary, you want to add a couple of thoughts on Agnes?
Yeah, I mean, the shrimp dish that he just spoke of is incredibly good, but also things like steak frites. I think this is like one of the best steaks
so good
in town. And I get to the point where I crave it, you know, so I know it's that good. It's been a really good place to host a birthday party. We did one of the first, I think, kind of off menu dinners there where Nick prepared Peking duck two different ways, and everybody was just blown away by it. The hospitality here is incredible, and it just feels fun. I think people want to be transported and have an experience, and you're definitely having an experience here. Pam's wine list is great. The cocktails are fun. They're playful. It's a serious restaurant without taking itself too seriously, and that's refreshing to me.
I think that's a great way to describe it.
One of the other things I like about this restaurant is that it didn't click for me right away. Like the first visit was rough on the edges, and it just seemed like there were so many ideas and not a lot of certainty about necessarily how to bring them all together on the plate. And I think it's a testament to Nick's work ethic and his ability as a chef that they kind of refined what they do. There were a couple of dishes on that early menu that dropped off, some other things that have come on, and just that, like, you know, like, we know that this is a good idea. We know that these things can work. We just have to figure out how to do it the right way. I think I really respect that, because it's easy to kind of be stubborn and think, oh, you know, I know what I'm doing. But if the feedback from the diners isn't good, then, you know, you got to let the chicken fried steak go and move on to something else.
When I took some friends the other day, the cheeseburger fried rice hit the table, and they took a bite and they just started laughing. They're like, this is one of the craziest dishes I've ever had. And it tastes so good. And I think that dish is such a great, like, you know.
Right. And that wasn't on the opening menu. And now it's a staple. And you couldn't imagine going Agnes and Sherman without getting it.
No, it's a diner meets, you know, classic Chinese fried rice and this weird thing that only would exist on the Agnes and Sherman menu.
All right. Mary, what's one of your favorite new restaurants of the year?
I'm going to go with one. I don't think it'll surprise you, but I think it'll surprise you that it's on my favorites and it's so new. Hipsy, Terrence Gallivan's new restaurant at Hotel Daphne. I'm so happy to have his food again. I missed it. He can cook, man. It's evident in the food that's hitting the table. All the pastas on that menu are delicious. There's a squid ink pasta or shrimp that's absolutely delicious. Staples like roasted chicken, just beautifully, beautifully prepared, beautifully cooked. One of the appetizers of the beets, delicious, fresh. I like it here a lot. The tiramisu was probably the best I've ever had, which is crazy. And I'm excited to see how the menu expands for lunch and brunch and all those things. Happy to see him cooking again.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the big kind of, well, but maybe the minor themes of the year is that we got three new cool restaurants in hotels. And for a city that's always been very skeptical about hotel restaurants in general, you know, Sochi is kind of the weird exception to the rule, but you know, to have Perseid open at the St. Augustine and Chardon at the Thompson and now Hipsy at the Daphne, it's like, okay, like, we can have cool restaurants in hotels. And all three of those are, you know, somewhere on my list of restaurants that opened this year that I've been to multiple times and I'm excited to go back to.
I agree.
I think it's the first time I've ever told people, like, hey, let's meet at a hotel bar. Like, and that's just not what our city's like. And I'm glad that we have those restaurants to make that excuse now.
Yeah. The lounge at the St. Augustine is
great.
I mean, you know, we did the date night draft and it came up in the date night draft. It is an impressive place. It has a great atmosphere, really well executed cocktails. It looks great. The listening lounge, they've done events there. I know, Rafi, you just did a DJ set there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I spun some records there. And then they basically are starting to have shows now in the listening room. The audio quality is that great.
So, yeah, I mean, I've only been to Hipsy the one time, you know, with you, Mary, and we enjoyed that meal. Just for the mozzarella cart, right? Just like the kind of the cheeky, you know, sense of humor of, yeah, we're going to, you know, scoop this cheese out and give you these toppings and it's all going to be like really, really delicious. And it's going to be a fun, you know, photography moment. All that stuff is really fun, I think.
I know it's a good restaurant because I'm taking other restaurateurs there.
Yeah, that's always a good sign.
It's like every, you know, most Mondays I get together with Charles Clark from B19 and, you know, we'll drink at Montrose Grocer or, you know, some new spot and then go to another spot. And the Marlene, the boutique hotel in Montrose, is a favorite of his. And the other day I was like, how about we go to Hotel Daphne in Hipsy? He's like, where's that? What's that about? And he loved it. So, you know, just to have a couple of apps and some, a round of cocktails and a bottle of wine amongst three or four people for him to see that space, like the feedback was so good. And yeah, it's a place I want to take people and entertain them. So yay for boutique hotels for Houston. We need more of that, not less of it. We're such a big, diverse city, but we really have lacked on hotel options forever and ever. So this is kind of fun.
Absolutely. And then I, you know, my first contribution to our discussion of best new restaurants, Rafi is a place that you and I went together. I'm thinking of Latuli, Brian Caswell's restaurant out in the Memorial area. You know, over the last 3-4 years, right, we've seen more and more restaurants opening, you know, along that I-10 corridor, Bar Bluedorn and Credence. And Latuli feels like kind of the next evolution of that, right? This ground up build, this big restaurant, really pretty space with all this cool art on the walls. You know, if you, you know, there's a Picasso if you kind of know where to look in the bar area. And then for Brian to kind of come back to the kitchen after a period of time away after he closed Reef and El Real, and to do the dishes that we know and love from him. You know, the meatballs from Stella Sola, the chicken and hummus from, you know, the menu he created for Postscript, the pizzas, the seafood from Reef, obviously all of those things, and still kind of give it its own environment. You know, I think it's been such a good addition to the area and it was needed because every time I've been in there, it's been absolutely packed. And when I scan online reservation systems, like looking for tables, like you got to book Latuli like 2-3 weeks out if you want a prime time. So I just think that's, you know, Rafi, I know you live in that area, so I'm going to turn it over to you and let you say a couple things about Latuli.
Yeah, I live in the area. It is popping all the time. To your point, you probably need to book out at least 10 days. I think what's cool is it's kind of like the greatest hits of Brian stuff with like all this new things that he really wanted to execute. I think just, you know, Brian's always been an expert at seafood. I normally don't order shrimp cocktail at a restaurant. It's just not something that attracts me normally. His shrimp cocktail with the three sauces is amazing. Perfectly prepared. The bread service is excellent. We had that seafood pizza with like lump crab and pecan pesto on it. Just super unique and not something you're going to get at any of the other restaurants. And then he's rotating stuff on that menu that is really cool and super reasonably priced wine lists. I think they intentionally did that knowing the area they're in the Memorial area. My parents go there all the time. It's hopping.
So harkening back to the Reef days of a well-priced wine list.
Yes.
I wish more restaurants in this town would do that, but I also understand how difficult it is to operate in today's environment. But a thoughtful wine list at a fair price, sign me up.
All right, Rafi, what's your next new restaurant you want to give a shout out to?
I'm going to guess this is on all of ours as well. I think I just went for the greatest hits. My next two, maybe not so much. Milton's.
Yes.
It actually opened in 24. So
okay.
But when we're talking about like some of the places that we've had great meals this year, I mean, certainly Milton's has been on that list for me.
Well, they opened like November or December of last year.
I think it was like November. I can. I'm no, because
You want me to technically review
this? This is so dumb because I went there for a friend of mine. I went there for a friend of mine's birthday, and she's a Libra, so that's like September, October. Okay. So it
damn, look at you with the zodiac signs, Eric. Turn up.
So are we gonna omit it?
Well, it's not a new restaurant.
Okay, we'll take it off. Let's take it off.
Okay. Give me one. We'll come back to Milton's. We'll give me one more.
Okay. Kitchen Rumors.
That qualifies.
What Chef Jossie has done at Kitchen Rumors is really cool. I think there are modern, you know, Indian restaurants like Pondicherry and Kiran's. I think this is different. I think what Chef Jossie's done is say, like, I'm going to do some real classics with some preparations you've never had in your life before. You know, from the craziest dish is one of his appetizers. He has a blue cheese chicken kebab as an appetizer. And you're like, I don't know if I want to order this from an Indian restaurant. But it basically tastes like American, you know,
it's basically buffalo chicken.
It's basically buffalo chicken, but it tastes like butter chicken. It's amazing. There are other things on the menu, like he puts butter chicken and ramen, and you're like, why would that go well together? Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's chewy noodles with butter chicken. How could you go wrong? And then there are just super classic preparations, things like his goat biryani is, I've talked to a lot of Indian and Pakistani people. It passes the test with them. His nihari's great and puts it with a different protein you wouldn't expect, like bison. And that neighborhood needed some kind of spice in a slightly cursed location, in a great neighborhood. So I have friends who live there. I've been a few times. It's a great place.
Well, and that location had a good run as Christine Ha's restaurant, whose name I'm totally blanking on, but like that, you know, and then it was Thai, you know, it was Evelyn Garcia's restaurant before she opened June, before that. And so I do think that neighborhood likes kind of creative, kind of fusion-y concepts. I mean, you know, that space was Beavers for a long time. That was this kind of like left of center, slightly offbeat take on a Texas Ice House and barbecue. So, you know, that space has a history of being kind of interesting restaurants. And I agree with you. I think Kitchen Rumors is just been, it's really thoughtful, I think. And you know, to go to Amarina and to have that fine dining experience in the Woodlands is kind of one thing. But to be inside the loop with, you know, a more creative and more affordable, frankly,
yeah,
menu, I think it just shows kind of what Chef Jossie is capable of. And this is a restaurant that, you know, I think you're right. I think we have a lot of Indian restaurants, but none that are kind of like blending like American comfort food with Indian flavors in quite this way. I mean, when you can do, you know, a lamb keema take on spaghetti bolognese,
yeah, like that's so cool.
That's just really smart in my opinion. And something I haven't seen before. And so that's exciting to me. Mary, have you been to Kitchen Rumors?
I have not, but it sounds delicious. I would definitely check this out for sure.
All right. Then give me one more of your best new restaurants of the year.
Oh, my goodness. It's tough. Basso was 2024, correct?
Basso was actually the very end of 2023. But yes, we've had 2 years of Basso in our lives.
I knew amazing. I knew it was more than a year. I was like, that's not too new, but it is definitely one of all of our favorites. I really have liked, I know it's evolved since it's open and it's continuing to change, but I really liked Camaraderie.
Yes, this is the one I was waiting. Like, if you hadn't done it, I was going to do it. So you talk about Camaraderie for a couple minutes.
So I've been there with you, and I've done both sides of it now, and I've done brunch. So tasting menu format in the dining room, a la carte in the bar, kind of lounge side. I will say of the two styles of dining, I think I prefer the a la carte. I just think the older I get, maybe I don't want to... I don't know. I want the option of whether I'm like sitting and staying for a long time, but both sides are very compelling. The food is really, really good. I've enjoyed brunch there. Cocktails are fun. Wine list has been really, really good. I love the Heights right now. I just think so, you know, we talked about Agnes and Sherman, also, you know, Basso, even though more than a year, 2 years old at this point. There's so many restaurants that have flocked to this neighborhood and have done well and kind of stand out in the dining landscape. I've really liked Camaraderie, and I'm curious as to how they will evolve in the next year.
Rafi, you want to add something about camaraderie?
Yeah, I think what Sean's done is something really special in that, like, it's, you can do the super fine dining experience, but you can also do a la carte and just get like pasta and some snacks and a dessert, and you'll leave really happy. Anything with a carb of any form, I will eat from Sean.
Damn straight. I'll go walk right now.
Bread, pasta. I just like anything that is a carbohydrate. He just somehow knows how to make delicious. And then there are dishes like that celery root dish is, I think, one of the best dishes in the city. You like, it feels, when you look at it, you're like, oh, this is super elevated, fine dining and fancy schmancy. And then you eat it and it feels like you're eating like a down home, like Southern salad, but it has that like little bit of Asian flair to it. Really impressive.
Well, and it has that sweetness with the apples. I love a salad with like a little bit of just like, not an overwhelming, but like a, you know, a little, you know, a little like acidity from vinegar. And then, but like a little pop of sweetness is just makes me so happy.
Really good. I love that dish.
No. And I just think like, you know, the one thing about camaraderie is that like, it's obviously like a very focused vision from Sean. And I think that, you know, wanting to do both things at the same time, like, you know, you can talk about it as fine dining, but it's only $75 to do that prefix. And, you know, good luck finding very many. There's very few other tasting menus that are that inexpensive.
You're going to spend $75 at most restaurants in town, no matter what.
100%.
I mean, you can spend $75 or more on a steak or a flight of nigiri or a lot of other things that aren't as creative or as fun as the prefix of camaraderie. So I appreciate that aspect about it. You know, I saw that he took the ossobuco pasta, which is maybe one of my two or three favorite dishes of the year, and put that on the a la carte. And so it's like, oh, good. Now I can go there and get a glass of wine and an ossobuco pasta and be good. But the other thing is, you know, Mary, you mentioned brunch, and I've been for brunch a couple of times. You know, the waffle that he's doing, the lobster omelet, all the little attention to details that make that place special. And, you know, our friends in the industry are howling because, you know, there's been some staff changes and obviously there's some drama going on behind the scenes, but as a diner, I don't really think you experience that. And so if you could sort of step apart from the gossip and just like focus on the meal, I think you can have a really good time there. And for Sean's sake, and just for the sake of that restaurant, like I hope that, you know, the next wave of people that are working there, like, settle in and everything's good, because I really want this place to be around for a long, long time.
I think it's a nice addition to the dining landscape, and the fact that he gets to play around with the tasting menu. And if a dish is good enough, like the ossobuco dish, and it jumps to a la carte, then you get to try it. So, you know, yay for the Heights, yay for Houston. I hope this restaurant continues to grow next year.
All right, Mary, one more new restaurant from you, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Ooh, one more, huh? Let's see. How about,
I mean, I have a bunch, but
how about Chop and Block?
No, that was also 24.
Fuck, sorry. Edit my F-bomb.
We did not our calendar research.
You did not do your calendar research.
All right, all right. I know.
Let me give you one more. Let me give you two more. Okay. The first one that I want to talk about is Yaya's Greek Kitchen. This is the Pappas reboot, right? This is taking, you know, Yaya Mary's and giving it the Little's Oyster Bar treatment, where it's more upscale. And really dialing in on ingredients and improving the wine list. And I, you know, again, like, I've been there a couple of times. Those lamb chops are killer. The hummus is great. Like, all those salads, you know, they opened with all this like fun cold seafood stuff that I think some of that has kind of fallen off the menu, which is too bad, because it was all really delicious and kind of was a good example of kind of what they were trying to do in terms of like giving people, you know, Greek food that's like true to their heritage, right? The Pappas family is obviously Greek, but that's also kind of modern and engaging. But this is a restaurant that I've been to a couple of times. I've sent friends there. It's probably the new restaurant that more people have asked me about than anywhere else, because it's so unusual for Pappas to do something new. And they did such a good job with Littles that there was a lot of excitement about it.
Yeah, I worked for the company, you know, for several years. They don't do new things very often. And this is, it was a huge passion project for the family. And I think the things that they do well, that what they've always done well. I think if you go there and, you know, all the mezes and all the other stuff is overwhelming to you, just stick to the seafood. Stick to the sea bass or the red snapper, and you will be extremely happy. Obviously, you know, you can't go ever wrong with lamb chops or moussaka with yayas and stuff like that. But great place for a group, big, good place to celebrate as well. Really, really impressive.
Mary, did you want to say something about yayas?
Yeah, I just think, well, yayas and Littles, and he's right. You know, Pappas doesn't really do new concepts very often, but the kids are all, you know, plus or minus my age. And it's kind of their, this is the beginning of like their vision for what Pappas looks like going forward. And I think that's interesting, right? You're taking a storied Houston legacy restaurant group, and how does it, you know, move forward into the next decade, next two decades? And how do you keep, you know, the consistency of that brand across new concepts? And I just think the time and effort that they instill in the training of their staff and the quality of their ingredients, of course it's going to shine. I went to Littles Christmas Eve, I think, with my mom and grandmother. I think it was Christmas Eve, yeah. And the food was outstanding. And so Littles and Yaya's are both, you know, newer restaurants to this group, and both are really delicious.
You know, the other thing about Yaya's is it's flexible, right? If you want to do, you know, an appetizer or a salad and an entree and dessert, like, you can have a very traditional restaurant experience that way. If you just want to share a bunch of appetizers and open a bottle of wine with, you know, four or five people, you can do that too. You don't even have to get the lamb chops or the snapper or any of the entrees. You can just have like a, you know, I don't mean to be cliche, but basically like a girl dinner, and kind of graze your way, like graze your way through the menu. And it's flexible in that way, in a way that, like, you know, the steakhouse isn't, you know, or like Papa Dough or Papacito's really aren't. Like, that's not how they're set up. So I appreciate that quality about it. Love what they did to the room, you know, that old Papa Dough location was so dark, you know, and they opened up some windows, and they just lightened and brightened the place. It feels good in there. And, you know, obviously this is the kind of thing that, you know, could be there 30 years from now, and we'll just take it for granted that it was always that way. So, so that's one new restaurant I want to mention. And then the other one that I just want to bring up just briefly is Booze Burgers, because we have so many burger places in Houston, but I really appreciate what Joseph is doing. Joseph Boudreaux, the chef of Booze Burgers, is doing, you know, in that little kiosk on Navigation. You know, it's, you know, if you work downtown, if you live in Edo or Third Ward, or even, I mean, even in the Heights or in the North Side, like, you know, this is a really nice addition for you. It's a good lunch option. It's a dinner option. And if you went to the pop-ups, it's like, okay, he can cook a burger. Like, we all know he can cook a burger. But what he's doing in that little kitchen with specials, you know, chicken sandwiches on Sundays and seafood on Fridays, and you know, it's cold outside, so he's going to make gumbo. I mean, he's a really talented guy, and showing off kind of the breadth of his talent for me as a diner has been so exciting. I mean, I think that, again, like, not to get into too much hyperbole, but like, that shrimp po' boy is one of the best shrimp po' boys, and it's only available on Friday. And then eventually it's going to rotate off the menu, and you won't be able to get it anymore. And I'm going to be sad about it.
Is it going to rotate off the menu? Oh my, come on.
Because he's going to do something else. Because he's going to do a Friday fish special, and he'll do something else instead.
Yeah, like, I think he wants to do other fried
he's
seafood.
A creative guy, and he wants to do different stuff.
Okay.
He could make a, like, but you could tell between the gumbo and the fried seafood that he's doing, like, he could do a seafood restaurant if he wanted to, but right, he's just making burgers right now.
I had that. I went there. It took me a minute to get there. I'm not normally on that side of town. I went golfing on that side of town. I had that burger after a round of golf, and it was so refreshing to have like a classic, thick burger with fresh lettuce. And I mean, they were busy. You go there on the weekends. There's a line. I'm so happy for Joseph. He's doing a great job.
Well, and there's a commitment to quality in it because he's grinding, like that's his beef blend. You know, he's not just buying, you know, 80-20 from whatever distributor. Like, he has a vision for what he wants that burger to taste like. And it includes grinding his own beef. And then you remember, like, oh yeah, he worked for the Nancy's guys at Tiny Champions for a little while and got kind of, you know, as he said on the show, like, this is the hill he wanted to die on in terms of making burgers was like doing his own burger grind. So, you know, credit to him for that. And I'm delighted to hear that it's busy on the weekends, because it's like a weekday lunch option for me. Like, if I can get some work done and it's like 12:30 or 1 o'clock and I can see like an hour break when I can get away, then I can run over there and grab a burger and be very, very happy about it. All right. And then, you know, I don't want to linger. I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, but the one other place I want to do just 2 minutes on Kaizen Sushi, because I don't really think I've talked about it much on the show. And this is the Ghost Kitchen to go only sushi restaurant in the Blodgett Food Hall. Chef Sunny, you know, restaurant quality sushi that comes to you by Uber Eats in a bag. And I've just been like, this has been like such an easy dinner go-to for me this year. You know, I've been to Oru and I've been to Katami, and I'm not losing sight of the fact that like there is better sushi that is more expensive, and I value those experiences. But like, sometimes I just want like tuna nigiri and a California roll, you know, on a Wednesday night. And, you know, that I can get that from Kaizen for, you know, 40, 50 bucks delivered to my door. That's very appealing.
I'm going to give 30 seconds to Oru, because technically they won't qualify for the list next year.
No, we can do Oru. We can do Oru.
Come and then move on to some
other topics.
What Chef Luis and Paolo are doing, it's so nice. And obviously you can get a la carte at Kira, right? But to basically have all the classics at Neo be a la carte now with whatever nigiri you want on demand from these guys is something I think, if you've been a fan of Neo like I have and been there many times, to be able to order it in a bit more of a casual setting for not as long of a dinner service is so special. They've been really working hard at this. I don't know anybody that cares more about sushi quality than these guys, and cares more about rice than these guys. It's really special.
Yeah, no, you and I are going to do that as a restaurant of the week the next time you co-host. But I will say, I had dinner at Oru. I thought it was delicious. There were, you know, a couple of little service things that I'll say for another conversation. But you're right, to be able to get, you know, and I don't think they're doing the dry aged fish. Like that's a big focus at Neo, and I don't think that's what they're doing at Oru as much. But it's all really delicious. And you know, the surprise for me was that charcoal grilled chicken. It's like marinated in like garlic and miso or some other, you know, Japanese type seasoning. And it's so delicious. It's like the best backyard chicken you've ever had, basically, with this like really classic potato salad. I just thought, this is such a smart evolution. Like, to have come from a very premium tasting menu experience, and then to do Kira, which is a restaurant that I know all three of us love, and then to this, which is like a broader vision of kind of what their food is. I think it's such a great addition, and you know, not an inexpensive proposition by the time you get, you know, a couple of cocktails and stuff, but a very delicious meal.
I haven't tried it. I'm the only one out of the three of us that hasn't been yet, but it is on my list. I had my birthday dinner at Kira this year. I love Neo. I just can't, you know, do that all the time. So I think this is a nice blend. I'm looking forward to going here soon.
All right, Rafi, let's move on to some of outside of the new restaurants that we've talked about. Obviously, we had some other memorable meals. So like, what are a couple of your memorable meals from established restaurants from this year in dining? Now you can talk about Milton's, by the way.
So I'm gonna go with Milton's. It took me a minute to get there. I think what they've done of achieving this perfect blend of trattoria with American red sauce is really special. It's not, you know, the appetizers are almost as good as the entrees at this restaurant, which I think is always impressive, from the perfect arancini balls to the
parsley salad
to the heart of palm. Like, my sister just went back and she lives in Brooklyn. So she's got her great choice of Italian restaurants. She's like, I don't know why I didn't reorder the heart of Palmer and Parsons salad. They're probably my two favorite things. The sourdough garlic knots are one of the most indulgent things in the city. And I don't know if I could go and not order it every time. And we're just going to skip the whole banter about the Cresta de Gallo because we all know what to say about that.
Yum, yum.
All the other pastas are good. And then, by the way, I am not a Parm guy. I really just don't order Parm. But you know what's actually almost better than the three protein options for the Parm? It's the spaghetti tomato sauce they serve with it. So I've really had some great meals there. And I never order lasagna at restaurants, ever. The lasagna there, the 100-layer lasagna is so good.
The 100-layer lasagna with the different fillings, like it just the preparation varies, you know, depending on whatever Chef Kent is excited about in that moment. But yeah, consistently good. And, you know, what's funny about the Milton's format is that, like, two of my most memorable meals of the year were when they took that act on the road, right? They did a collaboration with Truth Barbecue, Rafi, that I know you went to, and then they did another one. They did Feast of the Seven Fishes at Kitami a couple weeks ago ahead of Christmas that was spectacular. And so, like, it just shows how flexible this concept is, that it can do Texas barbecue and it can do, like, really cool Japanese and still feel like, you know, American style Italian all at the same time. This is absolutely one of my very, very favorite restaurants in Houston right now, and a place every time I get the opportunity to go there, I'm excited about it. Mary, what about you? What's a place that you kind of, an established place you went back to this year?
Well, a couple of places. I mean, listen, for this year, for staff holiday party for Montrose and Heights, we went to a combination of a couple of places. Pappas Steakhouse is as good as it's ever been. I mean, get out of here. The service, the food. I finally got the off-menu shrimp that everybody and their brother.
Oh, you got the fried shrimp?
Yes. I was like, damn it. I have never gotten this. I'm getting it no matter what. It's so good. You know, just all of it. The wine list, they always have some great wine off menu. If you ask the Psalms, they're taking such good care of their guests. Like, every single guest they take good care of. And we also went to Basso, since I guess that's more than 1 year old. I'll throw that in there too. It's like, where do you want to take people that you work with in hospitality that they're excited about going, or they'll learn something new, right? So definitely Pappas, check that box. And Basso is just such a fun, creative restaurant and such a good time. I don't think the way, you know, we were more than two people, so you can't sit at chef's counter, but that room is so small, and to just see the kitchen working the way it does there, and it feels like such a good restaurant around the holidays, and it was a fantastic experience. I also went back to Kieran's this year, and I hadn't been back to Kieran's in a long time, and it's as good as it's ever been.
Yeah, you know, obviously, I feel the same way about Basso that I do about Milton's. It's, you know, consistently good, and it's been fun to kind of watch it evolve. You know, like, it was kind of one thing when they opened, and they were doing that, like, you know, that kind of wedge salad, but it was lamb, bacon, and cabbage, and then, you know, that's long gone, but the pork chop remains, and like the, you know, the bread service has evolved, and the Basque cheesecake has evolved, and there's all these other little, you know, all these other little things that they've done over time, you know, the shrimp and the quail and all this stuff. And you know, it's interesting because, you know, I think, like, if you really left it up to Max and Jock, the chefs, like, they just blow the menu out like every 6 months, right? Nothing would stay, you know, maybe the pork chop, and everything else would go.
Yeah.
But finding that balance between, like, the creativity and giving people the things that they keep coming back for, I think it's been a good challenge for them. And the, you know, the service has gotten more knowledgeable, more refined. Like, it's really evolved into this really fun place where they have, like, a sense of humor about the way that they present the food to you and the experience that you have, but they take their job of executing that food very, very seriously. So, always a favorite of mine.
It unfortunately took me way too long to have my first meal there. I went there for the first time only a few months ago, and in a city full of steakhouses, that steak with that onion sauce is probably the best steak in the whole city.
It's out of this world good. And I think a lot of times the best steaks you're going to have at restaurants, even though I just shouted out Peppa Steakhouse, come on, best in class.
Yeah, but of course.
The best places to have steaks are not steakhouses much of the time. And this exemplifies that.
No, absolutely. Rafi, I know you had at least one more place you wanted to mention in this section.
I wanted to mention March. The Levant menu of this season was extremely impressive. I've been to a few of the seasons, and I think this was just definitely what Chef Felipe, Chris, and Omar are doing there. They really put everything into this in a time where, you know, serving this type of cuisine is a lot of political issues. They navigated how to explain the food. They did all their research. They even sourced ingredients from my family. They were serving in their Muhammad dish in the Meze course. They were using my family's pomegranate molasses. The dedication they had from serving Levantine cuisine, Syrian dishes, Egyptian dishes, Lebanese dishes, they just nailed it. Really, really impressive stuff. And I think when people are paying that kind of money, you need to be super impressed. And from when you do the wine pairing, that's when you really get the full experience. I don't know if many people know this, but June has one of the best selections of Chateau Mussar, which is the oldest Lebanese vineyard in Lebanon in America. And that's like half of the bottles of what you're drinking there for the wine pairing is amazing.
Yeah. And you know, I went to this with friends and someone who had never been before. And it's a very impressive restaurant, and the commitment to the experience of it all. You start in the lounge, then you go to the dining room. You can go back to the lounge if you really want for one last cocktail. You know, I truly, but like, you know, we talked about the Chronicle Top 100 pretty extensively, and I had plenty of things to say about it at the time. But like, I truly believe this is the best restaurant in Houston, just for the ambition of it, you know, and not just for the ambition of it really, but also the execution, right? That they're aiming to like a global standard with what they do, and they're meeting it. And some of the things that they do, right? Like changing the menu every 6 months completely and changing the wine list every 6 months completely is probably the thing that's going to hold them back from that second Michelin star, because it's not going to show the kind of consistency necessarily that Michelin is looking for. But that's okay, right? Like I would rather they keep doing that because it's so fundamental to what the restaurant is than become this like unobtainable, you know, standard or whatever. Like I'd rather have the creativity and the drive of it than worry about like whether it meets Michelin standards for, you know, a 2-star or a 3-star. So I think it's a wonderful experience. I think, you know, this is kind of dining at the highest level, at least in Houston. And, you know, I think I've told this story before, but I had this conversation a long time ago with someone whose children had gone to one of the omakase tasting places and spent, you know, $300 or $400 on dinner. And she looked at me and she said, "Do you think that's appropriate?" And I said, "Look, like I don't sit behind home plate at Astros games. I'm not going to sit at the 50-yard line or in the club level for Texans games. I don't need box seats to the opera, but I love restaurants, you know? And when I want the most premium restaurant experience, you get it by going to a place like Neo or Katami or March and getting the tasting menu. And so, you know, for people who love restaurants, and look, if you listen to me talk about restaurants for an hour every week through headphones, you love restaurants, right? There's, you know, it's not because I'm like so charming necessarily, but this is the pinnacle. Like this is worth saving up for. This is worth making a special journey. And I just think that, you know, nobody in Houston's doing it like that.
I think this menu was a great example of that, because not people. People don't traditionally think of Levantine cuisine food as this fancy Michelin star experience. And I think they really delivered on it. It was really special.
All right. I want to talk about some of the restaurants that closed this year. I mean, we could do this. We could do nothing but this for an hour. It has been a rough year for closings, but Mary, why don't you kick us off? What restaurant that closed this year will you miss the most?
Ooh, miss the most?
Why is it Riel?
Okay, I was gonna give you Riel because that's your baby. Probably Andiron, honestly. I liked Andiron. It was a restaurant I went to often. I thought it was such a beautifully designed restaurant. I loved the food here. It never caught on, which is kind of crazy because Michael Sandbrooks owns Pit Room. I mean, he knows meat. He knows Candente, you know. I think he just, I don't know, he put everything into this and it didn't work. And I'm sad that it's not there anymore. But I really liked, I very, very much liked this restaurant. There's a couple other classic style restaurants that had been around way longer that closed that I'll also be sad about. Himson, Nippon, but I'll let y'all talk first.
Yeah, I mean, Andiron was a place that I was very excited about when it opened because, like you said, Michael Sandbrooks owns the Pit Room and Candente, which are two very good restaurants in their respective genres. I liked a lot of what he did at 1751 CN Bar, particularly when Lyle Bento and J.D. Woodward were in the kitchen. And so I was really excited about Andiron. And I understand, the first iteration, I think, you know, and Michael was very candid about this, right? The idea of like the most luxurious steakhouse in Houston was too much for people. And they tried to pivot into something a little more casual, kind of more like at the Houston's Hillstone level. And it was too late. I think people just had kind of fixed their opinion about what it was and what it wasn't. And they didn't give it that second chance because that second iteration, where you could get the burger all the time, where you could get that French dip, where you could get some of the less expensive steaks and still get the good sides, was like kind of a cool, like modern kind of casual steakhouse that I was really excited about. So yeah, I'm bummed that that didn't work. Rafi, what restaurant closing are you the most sad about?
I think for me it was Ostia. I think what Travis was doing, the original idea of, you know, high quality pizza, pasta, you know, that roasted chicken with the salsa verde. It was just like what everyone wants from an Italian restaurant in their neighborhood. I'm just like, we don't have something like that here in Spring Branch, you know? And I think that for me was probably my top one. There's obviously some others, but that one will be missed.
Right. And then, you know, all right, I was sort of teasing Mary, but obviously for me, the saddest one is Riel, you know, a restaurant that I loved very much. You know, Ryan Lachane, you know, who else would put a really delicate crudo and raw oysters next to butter burgers and caviar tots, you know, the stuffed cabbage that would make his Ukrainian grandmother proud, I'm sure. You know, all of the just all of the dishes that made that place go, and how much fun he always seemed to have with the staff and the cocktails and just the simplicity of the room. You know, not like a room that, you know, says look at me or was going to win any design awards, but like, you know, that big open kitchen, the chef's counter, just a restaurant where I had so many great meals with friends, with family, a place that I'll really miss.
Riel is such a good Montrose staple for sure.
I think the menu is exactly, there's not many restaurants where people take swings like Ryan did. And I think that's what Houston was missing at the time. And I don't know if there'll be another one.
Right. And it was influential in its way. I mean, you know, he did pierogies and then I'd see them like pop up at other restaurants like, oh, well, I don't think it's a coincidence that like you're doing, like you didn't suddenly decide to do pierogies. You saw that Riel was having some success with pierogies and thought, oh, well, we could do our version of that, which is fine. But, you know, we see you working. I mean, we've talked about all of these places pretty extensively, but, you know, this is the last week for Polly's. And, I mean, I loved Ostia, and I went to Ostia, and I think, you know, maybe more than anyone else in the media, I was kind of rooting for Ostia publicly. But Paul East has always been that neighborhood go-to. You know, I lived in Montrose for a long time, and just that, the ability to go there for lunch or for dinner, for spaghetti or the chicken piccata, or just to pick up a couple of cookies, you know, just fed so many people for so long and so affordably. And that I can't believe it's going away. I can't believe it's come to an end.
Oh my goodness. What a staple for the neighborhood. I cannot believe it's closing. I will miss so many of the pastas here. I'll miss late nights at Camerata. What a cozy neighborhood wine bar that we've all loved for so long. How many people we know that have come through and worked at Camerata over the years. Holiday cookies, like seriously, those shortbread cookies. Somebody, please keep on that tradition. That's like the best gift to give people going to a party. I just think that Montrose, you know, counter establishments like this that were affordable, served really hearty portions. I hope something like this still exists in the neighborhood in years to come. I want a casual place similar to this in the future. So it will be missed. I really liked Polly's. I know the staff that works at both Polly's and Camerata is very sad to see it close.
Rafi, do you have one more?
I think I'm good on the closures. I think, okay. Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up by looking ahead a little bit. Rafi, what are one or two restaurants that are opening next year that you're really looking forward to?
I think I'm going to guess that this is on y'all's as well, but I think Angie's Pizza is probably the next big restaurant opening of the year in the Heights.
Good choice.
What Angelo has done in the past, where he went to go back to working for Chris Bianco in his meantime, getting ready for round two. I'm really looking forward to it. I don't know if anybody is making better pasta or pizza when he's made it in the city. And that's definitely on the top of my list. Another one, a close friend of the podcast and of all of us, Abbas Danani's opening up Burger Bodega Katie. Just know Abbas always got something up his sleeve. So he's going to be doing something out there that he's not doing in his little store in Washington. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, this is the real test for Abbas, right? Like it's kind of, you know, it's obviously difficult to open a single location, but adding the second location, as you know, adds a whole very other tough layer of complexity. And this is kind of proof of concept, right? Because if he can make two work, then he might be able to make, you know, 10 or 20 or 100 work. And frankly, that's what his family's best at, is running, you know, franchise restaurants far and wide. So, you know, that'll be very exciting. Angie's Pizza is the restaurant that Angelo probably should have opened from the very beginning. As much as I liked Cafe Louie, and as much as I had good meals at Cafe Louie, and as much as I like Louie's Italian American, he makes pizza, like, and he makes fantastic pizza. And so opening a restaurant where he's making pizza, like, which is what we all know him for, it's about time. And I can't wait.
There's no shame in that at all. His pizza is outstanding. I think this is what everybody wants so very much from him. So I'm excited.
Mary, what else are you excited about? What are you looking forward to in 2026?
I'm not surprised you haven't snatched this one out of my hands, but you might. I'm excited for what is to come for the former Vibrant space in the Montrose, very close to River Oaks area off of Fairview. We talked about Riel closing. This is just down the street on Fairview. Bobby Hugel and Justin Yu acquired the space this year, and it'll be opening sometime next year. I don't know the name yet, or I don't know the details, but I'm...
Right. I don't know anything about what kind of food they're going to serve. I don't know what they're going to call it. You know, it's so funny. When I talk to Bobby about Donna's, he's like, oh, we're working with this woman. We worked with this woman to pick the art for the walls at Donna's, and she'll be helping us out with Fairview, you know, just the name of the street where the location is, too. And it's like,
just call it Vibrant 2.0. Just do it.
Well, right. Except it'll have absolutely nothing to do with whatever was served at Vibrant. But yes, you know, Bobby and Justin teamed up to do Better Luck Tomorrow, which was really fun. They teamed up again with Chef Mark Clayton to do and Terry Williams to do Squabble. And that's one of the best restaurants in the Heights or anywhere else in Houston. And so obviously whatever they're doing is the next thing is terrifically exciting. I really am hoping that at least a little bit of Justin Yu's affection for Houston's like winds up somewhere on the menu.
That Houston's
pop-up he does at T-Rex every year is so much fun. So I'd love to see at least a little of that. Obviously for me, Charlet by Chef Austin Simmons, the new steakhouse in the Woodlands, you know, Austin did incredible work at Tris. Like that's certainly one of the saddest closures for me this year that we didn't talk about just because I had so many great meals there. And that, you know, he's, you know, gotten really into ranching and cattle genetics and all this other stuff. And that he's got, you know, ranch to table control over the beef that he's serving in the dining room. And then also at the butcher shop, that'll be part of the restaurant. You know, the sky's the limit for that place. And he's just been doing like little burger pop-ups out of a trailer in the parking lot of an HEB. And I drove an hour for that burger and it was totally worth it. The burger's fantastic. And so if that's what he can do with a burger, I can't wait to see what he does with like plated entrees, right? Like, it's going to be a lot of fun. All right. Last topic. We had three drafts this year. We did date night round two. We did desserts and we did Vietnamese restaurants. So Rafi Nasser, what should we draft on the podcast in 2026?
Still waiting to win one of these drafts. It'll happen eventually.
You and Chelsea Thomas are the bridesmaids, the Susan Lucci's of the What's Eric Eating podcast draft.
Much like my fantasy football season, eventually it'll happen. I'm going to go Habib. Let's do a Middle Eastern draft. Let's do it.
Yes, that's fun.
We've got a great Middle Eastern scene from, you know, breakfast places like Cedar's Bakery to fast casual places like my own. Selfishly, I just want to highlight what we have to offer, obviously, other than my own places, you know.
Right. And also like some high end stuff, right? You know, Rumi's, Hamsa.
Yeah.
Even Octo to a certain extent, you know, there's some interesting stuff happening at all levels. A nice mix of like the classic staples, you know, a la Seal and
Arby's and the food trucks. It'd be fun.
Right. And even Phoenicia, right? Like, you know, such a staple of Houston's dining scene. All right, Mary, what do you want to draft?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. Something simple like that just makes me happy. So pizza.
I was thinking pizza too. Yeah.
Well, you know? I think it's Italian, right? I don't think we could just draft pizza because I think too narrow. but I think you could draft Italian.
Italian would be a lot
with of fun. A heavy focus on awesome badass pizzas.
Three categories of pizza in the Italian draft.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, and you know, look, we did Tex-Mex, but we did not do Mexican. And so to spin that around and be like, let's do a taco or a torta and, you know,
mole,
fine dining, mole, this and that. I think that'd be a breakfast. We can all fight over La Guadalupana. You know, I think that's certainly a possibility. I think date night draft round three is going to happen. But yeah, I think, you know, these are fun. I mean, this whole show is, I do the show because it's fun and because people like it. But the drafts are especially fun. And I had the experience where I was listening to the Vietnamese draft at my house with a friend who was over and who's like, likes a good restaurant, but isn't as obsessive as I am or as we are. And he kind of perks his ears up and he's listening to it. And he goes, "Hey, it sounds like you guys are having fun doing this." And, you know, I think that's what we're always going for with the draft episodes, with episodes like this. And really that's just kind of a place to wrap this up. I always hope it sounds like we're having fun for the audience. I hope you're always enjoying listening to it. You can always email me with your questions or comments, Eric, E-R-I-C at culturemap.com. You can always message me on Instagram at Eric Sandler with your thoughts. I always appreciate the feedback. You know, we're connected on the radio side, a guy who used to be on our air for a long time on ESPN 97.5, Charlie Polillo. Used to say, if you take the time to write it, I'll take the time to read it. I'll go you one better. If you take the time to write it, I'll take the time to respond to it. So that's it for this year. That's it for today's show. Thank you to my panelists, Rafi Nasser of Craft Pita, Mary Clarkson of Heights Grocer and Montrose Grocer, our producer, Michael Carroll. We're going to take a week off in the new year, and then I will be back after that with more new episodes. Thanks so much for listening.